All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Samantha. I'm a registered dietitian and weight loss coach, helping people quit the cycle of chronic dieting and lose the weight for good. If you want to learn more about me and get my top tips for jumpstarting your weight loss, you can head over to Samantha O'Toole. It's OTOOLE.com/how-to. Again, it's SamanthaO'Toole.com/how-to. And if this is your first time listening, welcome. I'm super happy to have you here. On this show, I discuss all things weight loss, giving you practical tips on how to make the journey more enjoyable. I also bring on guests who are on their weight loss journey and also experts to discuss different aspects of weight loss. So today I have an awesome guest, Dr. Stacy from foodtherapymd.com. She completed her medical training and residency at UCLA Medical Center and obtained her board certification in internal medicine. She had a private practice in Los Angeles, but after nearly two decades, she realized that she was participating in a failing medical system. Her patients were on increasing numbers of prescription drugs, but the cycle of debilitating chronic illness and death wasn't changed in any way. So she decided to educate herself more on the body and nutrition, and then began to treat her patients using plant-based nutritional protocols that focused on the inflammatory basis of disease and the healing anti-inflammatory properties of whole plant foods. She says, just as doctors prescribe drugs for a particular illness, your nutrition prescription should carry the same specificity, but without the side effects. So welcome, Dr. Stacy. I'm really excited to have you on today.
Thank you so much. I love being here. Thank you. And I love what you're doing, by the way.
Oh, and I love what you're doing. So can we just start with your journey from typical conventional medicine to basically what you're doing now? Like, how did that all happen?
You know, and surprisingly, it was actually a patient that led me down this pathway. His name was Stanley Newton, by the way. He was one of my patients who had liver failure from a viral hepatitis. And he had it bad, was pretty much in the hospital every 3 to 4 weeks for some complication from his liver failure, usually bleeding from some place or fluid buildup or whatever. So we were having him listed for a liver transplant. And he came to me one day and said he just didn't want to do it. He wanted to find some other option, but he didn't want to do the transplant. So I supported him in that. And I said, you know, good luck on your search. Whatever you know, find, let me know whatever you're doing, because, you know, I'm your doctor. I need to know what your process is. So long story short, he found a doctor who did, back then, it was called East-West Medicine. And this physician put him on a plant-based diet. He was juicing large amounts of certain vegetables every day. Minimal amount of supplements, but there were a few, but nothing crazy. No meat. And as he was going through this process, and I'm learning about what he's doing, and I'm seeing his change. He went almost 5 years without one single hospitalization after changing these things. Wow. They took him off of the transplant list because on follow-up biopsies after about 2 years, his liver had regenerated enough to the point where he could no longer be considered like a status one, you know, on mm-hmm. a transplant list. So that got me got my curiosity piqued, because this was actually the first time that I saw disease being reversed.
Right.
And what I had been doing and what I realized I had been doing at that point was disease management. So I wasn't getting rid of anything. I was just managing it with a whole bunch of drugs and procedures and other things. But it was pretty much just prolonging the inevitable. No one got healthier. A lot of people, if I'm honest with myself, it probably precipitated, you know, their death or their, you know, unhealthy lifestyle even more because of the side effects, everything that all the drugs that, you know, we take, your liver and your kidneys have to metabolize them. And when people are on, which is extremely common, I see it every day, you know, 15, 20 different medications, your organs are overloaded. The side effects, you know, can be deadly. And it just got me really seriously thinking about what I was doing. It was almost, to be honest, it was almost a crisis moment in my career, in my life, because I felt disingenuous, you know, and almost, and I hate to use the word fraudulent, but people were coming to me to get better, and I may have inadvertently be making them worse, and I wasn't helping. I was shoving them with a lot of pharmaceuticals, but, you know, true health and disease reversal was elusive. It just wasn't happening. And that's when I started educating myself, taking other courses, learning from other people who were the, you know, the masters, other physicians in nutrition and using nutrition to reverse disease and illness. And it was shocking because all these people were out there. The research was out there. The scientific foundation for this was out there, but I was never taught it, period. End of story. I went to one of the top medical schools in the country and was never taught any of this stuff. And that was also very surprising.
That's frustrating.
Very frustrating. And so I started, quote, experimenting, you know, with these things with like my family members and my friends. One of my dear friends, best friends, is an orthopedic surgeon, and she also has rheumatoid arthritis. And at that time, she was doing very poorly. She couldn't operate because of the rheumatoid arthritis. She was on injectables, you know, steroids, all types of medication. She was feeling horrible. And I kind of used her as a test study, changed her diet, juicing, which allows you to get concentrated phytonutrients that are easily absorbed. And she did amazing. I mean, this is 10 years later. She has two kids. She's been off of her medications for years. Wow. Yeah. And then doing it in my own practice and seeing people get off of their medication, seeing them actually thrive and be healthier instead of just, you know, miserable and suffering from side effects and, you know, not changing the course of their illness in any way.
Right. Yeah. And it sounds like you're, like, I was asking about your transition from conventional to where you are now. And it sounds like it was almost necessary. Like, you found that disease could be reversed by this, this, and that. And it's, you can't unlearn that. So, like you said, it was like a crisis. It was like, I have to change my entire practice.
If, you know, if you know better, you do better. And if you know better and don't do better, to me, that's malpractice. You know, you're withholding life-saving treatment from someone. And so once I knew, I didn't have a choice. I couldn't go back to doing things the way I was doing it. I mean, it got to the point where I was actually, the days that I would go into my office and see patients, I'd feel nauseous on the way to work and kind of had that anxiety. And it was just my body and my mind and my spirit telling me this just isn't right.
Yeah, right. Wow. Yeah. And I think some people in many different situations, we don't want to listen to that intuition because it takes so much work to kind of turn things around.
You have to change once. And it's why doctors today don't want to hear it. Because right. Once they hear it, they have to do something about it. Or again, it's malpractice. They have no excuses. And it's a hard change. It's a hard change. And it takes time and it takes re-education. It takes money. It's a difficult thing. And that's why so many doctors just, you know, put their fingers in the air and go, la, 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 you know, yeah. I don't want to hear it. Because they know once they know it, they can't unknow it.
Yeah, I love that. That makes so much sense. That was kind of my, I have a similar journey. But when I went into nutrition, I mean, I always knew I wanted to be a nutritionist since I was in high school. I knew I wanted to be a dietitian. But I thought it was because, you know, food was healing, it could do amazing things for the body, all that. So I went into thinking, like, I went into my conventional training thinking that that was what I was going to learn. And it was like, it was a complete opposite. It was similar to, you know, conventional medicine training where it's just you're managing disease. So I was taught, okay, you manage diabetes with this amount of carbs. And I didn't, I knew from my own research and reading even before college that food could heal and reverse many conditions. So then after I became a dietitian, I was practicing on my own, kind of using what I had learned from my self-study combined with what I learned in conventional nutrition. But then I was like, I have to go back to school and learn more about this so I can kind of explore the healing side of nutrition and also the connection between mind and body, because that was one thing I realized when I started counseling patients too. And I wonder if you realize the same thing, is that you can't just give people the facts and tell them what to do, even if it's the best information like that we're talking about here, because if their mindset is, you know, in the toilet, then they're not going to do anything. So I realized there was right. So much more to working with clients. Did you kind of come across that same issue?
Yes. It's almost like I needed a psychology degree yes. in order to break through to people, which is one of the reasons why I'm so grateful that there are people out there like you who are trained and can use that and teach that mind-body connection, you know, more effectively than I can. Because, yeah, just giving the information to people, unless you can flip that switch, is useless. And what happens with most people, because it happens to myself as well, is if they feel overwhelmed, like it's too much, then you freeze and you do nothing. And that's what I think a lot of people do when it comes to weight loss or when it comes to making, you know, health changes or dietary changes, is it's just, it seems like too much. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you get frustrated, when I get frustrated, I fall back into what's familiar. And that's, you know, Chick-fil-A and, you know, yeah. Fast food or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the things, like, I didn't understand in the beginning when I was in the hospital as a dietitian and people would have a heart attack or they would have an amputation from diabetes complications and all these traumatic events. And I couldn't believe that they would come back and they would be back in the hospital. And I was just thinking, how did that not get through? You know, how did that not create, you know, the feeling of I need to change? But in reality, it was, the sad thing was I would go see them after the heart attack the day after, and I would have about 10 minutes to tell them what they needed to do to, you know, prevent this from happening again. And then that was it. I mean, unless they really were committed and signed up with an outpatient dietitian that they could go see weekly or biweekly. I mean, that was kind of the nutrition prescription and recommendations that they got. And I just, now I look back and I realize, first of all, they were so stressed out. They just had a heart attack or an amputation or something. They weren't listening to me. And, you know, their family's there, everything's crazy. And they're so overwhelmed, and the last thing they want to do is change their entire life. Sometimes one event is enough for people to change, but honestly, it's usually like 2, 3, 4, or 5 instances where it really gets the message across to wanting to make a change.
And it's also, I think it's the space in between those events where the real change happens, because when people get scared and overwhelmed and frightened, again, they fall back to what's comforting and familiar. That's not a time when you're scared and frightened to jump into something new. In fact, that's the opposite. You know, people do the opposite of that. And I find in hospitals and people, my clients and patients who had like the cancer diagnosis or, you know, the heart attack, is they fall back into comfort because they don't know what else to do. They're frozen. And so, yeah, you do what's familiar. You do what you've been doing for 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years of your life.
Yep. Yep. Definitely. And I think it's interesting too, when you said before that you were frustrated, like you never really learned about how nutrition and making lifestyle changes can really reverse and prevent all these incidences and conditions, and how frustrating that is. But it is, I mean, it's just the fact that it usually takes, and you probably have a better estimation on this, but it takes about like 20 to 30 years for medical education and science to kind of catch up, right, to the medical schools.
It, in most things, it can take a while. Some things are picked up quite rapidly, but I think one of the things that medical education is going to have a challenge with is the dominance of the pharmaceutical industry in medical education. Until we can find a way to fund medical education and research without the pharmaceutical companies being involved, then it's going to be an even slower change. When there are people who have a vested interest in making sure that drugs are prescribed and that they're repeat customers, then medical education is going to suffer. There's just no interest at the moment for a pharmaceutical company to fund treating disease and reversing disease with nutrition. There's no money in it. If you can get people off diabetes medicine, you're going to knock off billions of dollars in profit to those same companies that are funding that medical school or funding, you know, paying the physicians and the professors who teach there. So I think that's a hurdle that, you know, medical education is going to have to come to grips with. And there's going to be a reckoning very soon. I think especially younger physicians in training are starting to question these things. And it's going to come to a head at some point, and I'm looking forward to it. And I hope I'm one of the ones that can make people uncomfortable enough to address it. So yeah. That's going to be an issue.
Definitely. That's great. hopefully it will be sooner than later, but I mean, I'm seeing it. Functional medicine is just getting huge now. I see a lot of doctors now going back and getting their certification, and it's not really, functional medicine isn't the like the only thing you can do. I mean, there's naturopathy. You can even be trained conventionally, but also understand all of this stuff. And that's something I talk about a lot. Yes, where absolutely. We're talking about, you know, conventional medicine is necessary. We need medications. We need, you know, if you break your leg, you know, yeah. Holistic functional medicine
absolutely
isn't going to do much.
Right. I mean, no, you know, and I'm not trying to take medicine back into, you know, the dark ages. I mean, people, you know, don't die from appendicitis anymore. You know, they don't, right, you know, right. You know, a broken leg used to be fatal. Now it's not. You know, pneumonias don't kill hundreds of thousands of people anymore. So there are places for drugs and pharmaceuticals for people. There's definite places. The issue that I have is that, one, it shouldn't be the only treatment ever. And it also shouldn't be the first treatment. It shouldn't be our reflex. And right now, the treatment reflex is always to prescribe first and ask questions later. And yeah, medications and pharmaceuticals should be used in situations where there are no other options. And that's just not the way they're used at this point.
Yeah. And that brings up a question I wanted to talk to you about too, is because a lot of my clients are coming to me. A lot of them have, you know, just had an appointment with their doctor, and their doctor's telling them, you know, your blood pressure is high, your cholesterol is high, your blood sugar is going up, you know, you might be pre-diabetic. And they're telling the client, you know, just lose weight, just lose the 30, 40, 100 pounds, and all that will go away. Now, there's a lot of things I want to talk about around that, but what you were just mentioning is How long, like from a doctor's perspective, you know, if you have someone that needs to lose 100 pounds and their blood pressure is high, can they wait 3 months and try these, all the healing nutrition stuff that we're talking about? Can they change their diet and their lifestyle? Or is it, you know, is it best to do the medication, combine it with the lifestyle and nutrition, and then eventually get off? Like, what's your protocol?
Well, one, it depends on how severe it is. So someone who, if I have a client who is, you know, borderline diabetic, then I would say, let's do the nutritional protocols first. If, or has borderline high blood pressure, et cetera. If I have someone whose, you know, blood pressure is, you know, 200 over 100 and something, then they need medications as a, you know, a bridging mechanism. And a lot of people come to me already on 10, 15, 20 different medications. So the key thing is combining the two. And usually the way the process goes is they're on, you know, 10 different medications for various reasons. They're put on nutritional therapies, and their medications have to be decreased and then eliminated because they just don't need them anymore. So for example, their blood pressure is very high. They're on 5 medications. They're started on a nutritional protocol for blood pressure. And as they're changing their diet and doing the protocol, they're getting their blood pressure checked and their blood pressure is dropping really low. And then at that point, you know, their doctor says, oh, your blood pressure is pretty low. We probably need to eliminate this one. And then they continue on the nutritional protocol and their blood pressures are still really low. And then the doctor says, oh, we probably need to eliminate these. Your blood pressure's too low. And then eventually, which is great, that means the food is now taking over the job of the medications. And that's how you get off of them. And the same with diabetes and, you know, other types of chronic illness. So it's not one or the other. You can do both. And then while the nutritional therapies start gearing up and the nutrition changes your biochemical environment in your body, which makes it not necessary for you to be on the medications, then you're slowly, you know, decreasing the pharmaceuticals and getting off of them. And when I say slowly, generally people come back in about 3 to 4 weeks and need to have, especially blood pressure and diabetes medications, need to have them tapered off because their numbers are dropping so low that it's just not necessary anymore.
Right. And that's what I've seen as well, especially with blood sugar numbers.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Those come down so fast, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But that's really good to hear. I'm glad you kind of explained that because I think, you know, you're either really dependent on your medication and you're not making any lifestyle changes and you're like, okay, I'm going to be on these meds forever and you're going to keep going on living the life that kind of got you on the medication. Or, you know, those aren't the people I see, because the people I see are coming to me and they're either, a lot of them are scared to go on to a medication and some of them don't want to. They're like, my doctor just prescribed me, you know, cholesterol meds and blood pressure meds, but I don't want to go on them. I just want to go the natural route. And that's where it can kind of get tricky and, you know, trying to explain, just because you're going to be on them for a month, 2 months, three months, doesn't mean that you're going to be on them
exactly
forever.
They're not addictive.
You're protecting yourself from, for example, the consequences of really high blood sugars or really high blood pressure, because that's damaging you in some way. So if we can just get it down quickly and really commit to these next 3 months, really. 3 months is kind of like my minimum where I work with my clients. Then, I mean, by then things should be, like you said, it only takes a few weeks. Things will start to come down. So that's good to hear.
Yeah. So it's not all, you know, it's not an all or nothing thing. Like I have to pick this or I have to pick that. If you need medications in the short term, because, you know, your levels are at a critical, you know, at a critical spot, it's okay. You can still get off of them. And people get off of them, you know, all of the time. What you can't do is to say, I want to get rid of all of my medications, but then you don't change anything else about what you're doing. So just stopping them and saying, oh, I'm off of my medications, I want to be healthy, it doesn't work that way. It actually, you have to do something to take the place of those medications and change, you know, your lifestyle and your habits and how you eat. It's just not going to happen all by itself.
Right. And that also brings up the idea of doing something in the short term versus actually changing your life. Like right. When the doctor says, you just need to lose 40 pounds.
Oh, sure. Okay. I'll do that tomorrow. No problem.
Yeah. And people do. They'll, because I understand they're really scared. They want to lose weight as fast as possible. They're going to go on a low carb, low calorie diet, lose the 40 pounds. Yeah. Those numbers are going to go down. And then what's going to happen is that was so unsustainable that they're going to go back to their lifestyle and their diet that they were on before, gain the weight back. You know, if you're not obviously eating good healing foods, then your numbers are going to go up even more. And then this is just the cycle. So, and that was kind of what I wanted to talk to you about too, the difference between lowering the blood pressure, cholesterol, glucose, lowering all that with, you know, for example, just any type of diet, which basically lowers the calories and lowers macronutrients like carbs, versus something like what you do and what I do, which is more about healing foods and more plant-based. So can we just talk about the difference between, because people just think, okay,
just I love matter. Yeah. You know, that's such a key point. Losing weight by any means is not necessarily healthy. Having excess fat is a dangerous metabolic, situation. It's an inflammatory condition. It causes chemical changes in the vessels in your heart, in your kidneys. It's a risk factor for cancers. Fat cells produce estrogen, so hormone sensitive cancers, grow in an environment where there's excess fat. So it's a dangerous condition. It leads to insulin resistance and all other types of things. So losing weight, even if you lose weight by an unhealthy method, like, a heroin addiction can cause you to lose weight, anorexia can cause you to lose weight. I mean, lots of things, depression. So all of those things can cause you to lose weight, but they're not, I wouldn't recommend them, for people who are trying to get healthier. So only to a point will just weight loss help you. And if you lose weight in a dangerous way, you can also inadvertently increase your risk of heart disease or cancers or other types of diseases, because although you've dropped the weight, you're funneling, toxic foods into your body at the same time, like the chocolate chip diet or something. So, you're eating a whole bunch of processed sugar, but the calories are so low, you're losing weight. It's not going to make you healthier overall. The good thing is there's a way to lose weight and decrease your chances long-term, not just short-term, but long-term of chronic disease, like heart disease and strokes, cancers, autoimmune disease, all of those things. I have found that using, plant-based nutrition or whole food plant-based nutrition, I always make the distinction because, potato chips and French fries are also plants. Technically. So you don't want to make your, diet, based, just on that. But it not only causes you to lose weight because you're eating high nutrient density, but low calorie foods. It also decreases insulin resistance. It decreases your chances of cancer. If you have cancer, it decreases cancer progression and can even cause, reversal of certain cancers. The same with heart disease. So how you lose weight actually matters. And just doing it, going on a fad diet just to drop the pounds is not going to help you know, long-term chronic disease or long-term goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this comes back to how I ask my clients, why are you doing this? And why are you losing the weight? Because the first answer, of course, is just, you know, I want to lose the weight so I don't have to be on those meds, right? Well, okay, why? Because, you know, I'm nervous about the side effects. Okay, why? Because I want to live longer. Why? I want to be able to, you know, see my grandson's graduation. And so if we go a little bit deeper onto why you want to lose weight, this is going to give you more of the motivation to do it in a healthy way. Because like you just said, when you do it short term, you're actually causing damage to your body systems, many different ways, liver, kidney, cardiac, all that stuff, you're causing damage. And then that doesn't lead to you being at your grandson's graduation and your real reasons why. So that's why getting real clear on why you're actually doing this is really important, and not just stopping at, you know, your first answer or even your second answer, but really taking some time. And this is what I like to do with my clients, which can help, you know, increase the behavior change, because that is what we're talking about, is the hardest thing, because we have our logical whys and we have our emotional whys. And if you're, no, your logical why is to decrease the blood pressure so I don't have to take meds, but your emotional why is you want to live another 20 years so you can go to your grandson's graduation and do all that family stuff and be around for your husband or, and all that. So getting clear on the emotional why is really important, so that you're not thinking so short term, because when you're thinking short term, that's when you're doing something drastic and dangerous, like a low calorie diet. And not to mention, I talk about this a lot too, but the low calorie diets, they damage your metabolism in the long run. And that's why we see people losing 20 pounds, gaining 25, losing 25, gaining 30. And then it keeps going and going and going until you're at your highest weight you've ever been, because your metabolism is just like shot.
So what, you're saying you shouldn't do the master cleanse for a month? Is that
right? Yes, totally. And you know, that kind of brings up another topic too. So I talk a lot about detoxification, and I just posted something the other day about time-restricted eating. And I don't know your thoughts on this. So I would love to actually just hear your thoughts on detoxification. And you kind of already mentioned it in the beginning about the liver and kidneys and all that, and what we can do to kind of enhance detox. And you might just want to start with, like, is it even possible or real? Because there's this whole debate of, yes, we can, you know, our body has our own detoxing system. We don't need to take a pill or anything like that. But, you know, there are certain things that we can do to support it. So yeah, I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I do think that, like, one, I'm a big proponent of intermittent fasting, particularly, well, let me preface this by saying everything that I recommend and advise is evidence-based. And if there's not enough scientific basis for it, I don't recommend it to other people. There may be things that I do because intuitively, you know, I like it and I may do it for myself personally, but I would never advocate something that was not backed by science and had, you know, substantial research to support it. So in keeping with that, I do like intermittent fasting. There's a wide body of very good research that supports intermittent fasting, particularly for cancer patients. And I'm sure you get a lot of cancer patients or people who are at risk for cancer or are cancer survivors. But intermittent fasting in that respect is great for cancer survivors and people undergoing chemotherapy. It helps to protect the healthy cells in patients that are undergoing chemotherapy because of the inability of tumor cells to be able to adjust their metabolism in periods of starvation or decreased glucose consumption. So I do like intermittent fasting. I do like detoxing as well. When I do detoxes, it's not a, it's more of a flooding the body with high concentration of phytonutrients that have very specific places and very specific functions in the body. So it's nothing bizarre. It's not, you know, taking a bunch of, you know, pills or any of that type of stuff, but it is flushing out your organs, drinking lots of water, doing concentrated cruciferous vegetable juicing, which are, you know, in the realm of plants, the phytonutrients and phytochemicals in cruciferous vegetables, which are vegetables like broccoli, cabbage, collard greens, cauliflower, radishes, all of those kind of bitter type vegetables. They are the nutritional powerhouse, you know, in the plant world, and the chemicals that they have in them, the phytochemicals, help to cleanse out the liver. It stops oxidative stress in the body. They're immensely anti-inflammatory. It helps to stop the inflammation in your fat cells, in your organs, all of those things. So detoxing for people, I think, is a good thing, especially for people who typically have a diet that is based on, you know, animal products, non-organic foods, you know, that have lots of pesticides and things that concentrate in the liver and your other organs, people who eat a lot of fast food, processed sugar. I think it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. But it has to be done in the right way, not in a fad-based way where, you know, somebody's trying to sell you a pill or a tea that will, you know, guaranteed to detox you in 24 hours type of thing. Right. It's not, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. No, I totally have the same view on it. And really, I mean, you should be detoxing. You are detoxing every day. Your body never stops. Your liver doesn't stop, and your kidneys don't. But you should be supporting the detox process every day. And like you said, it's really basic stuff. I mean, one thing that's why I love with so I don't technically follow intermittent fasting, the 16-8. I do more of time-restricted eating. There's a lot of research on that as well. They're pretty much like the same thing, but with a tiny bit of difference. And, you know, in the world of fasting, it's like, which one do you follow? But I mean, the point is you have a longer fast overnight, which helps your body kind of, you know, take out the trash pretty much, and helps you detox as well. So I do love fasting as well. I think that's the basic form of detox. And then, like you said, when you're doing that, and I mentioned this on the last podcast, you have to drink enough water so that your body can actually release what you've kind of put together in a little detox package.
And fasting can be done. And, you know, one of the things that the research hasn't conclusively shown is which type of fast is best. So the research is there that a wide variety of intermittent fasting helps. Some people, like a once a week fast, has also shown benefit, or, you know, twice a week, or, you know, the 16-8, or, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, types of fasting. Even my 97-year-old grandmother actually does an intermittent fast once a week.
Wow. Yeah.
She sure does. And what's so funny about it, and I will admit this on a podcast, I didn't know much about intermittent fasting until my grandmother came to me and said that she's doing fasting once a week. And that's when I started actually.
How did you hear about it? Catch on to the news of what everybody's doing?
Well, no, I'll tell you how she found out about it. She found out about it in her church.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And fasting is, there are a lot of religious principles mm-hmm. that endorse intermittent fasting. So she came to me and told me that's what she was doing. And I was kind of like, what? my 97-year-old grandma. But so I started researching it and learning about it. And I was like, oh my gosh. She's like, yeah. So she taught me something.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, the reason I got into it actually, it was for selfish reasons. I was having trouble with my sleep. I was just in a really like stressed period and, having crazy nightmares, couldn't stay asleep. And so I was trying to find what could help me. And one of the things that came up was, not eating really close to your bedtime. Now, which I wasn't doing too much anyway, but sometimes I would see clients. This was when I was in a clinic and I would be there till, 8 or 9 o'clock. I'm not perfect. Sometimes I didn't pack my dinner and I would eat when I would get home, and then I would go to bed early because I go to bed early every day. So I was looking more, researching more on this. And one of the biggest results of time-restricted eating or just a longer overnight fast and really stopping your eating at an earlier part of the, mm-hmm. of the day was better sleep. So I was like, I have to try this. I tried it just for a couple days and I noticed immediately that I was sleeping better. And the biggest thing was that I was waking up feeling much lighter. Like mm-hmm. I used to wake up and my eyes would feel very heavy. I had to go back to sleep, but I was waking up and my eyes would just be open. And I was like, wow, oh my gosh, this is a miracle. So that's how I started with fasting. And then I started looking more into it. If you know Dr. Sachin Panda, he's like the leader of time-restricted eating, and he does a lot with diabetes as well, and trying to see a lot of animal studies, but some human as well, and with blood sugar. And then I started, trying it out on my clients and using it with them. And pretty much everyone that tries it loves how they feel. They just have to kind of get into a groove.
Absolutely. And what you were saying before about like the detoxing, our bodies and our organs have natural detox mechanisms. Our liver naturally detoxes, our kidneys, our lymphatic system. However, our bodies did not develop evolutionarily to handle the huge amounts of poisons and toxins and prescription drugs and, all of the things that we're exposed to, pollution. So our organs do naturally detox, but they get behind. We're overloading them, beyond the levels where they can naturally detox themselves just by, doing nothing and just living. So again, I think it's
I'm glad you mentioned that, because sometimes our world is so normal to us.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I mean, it's not. I mean, when we walk down the street, we're breathing in car exhaust. Like our body has to fight that off, and we're breathing in crap all day. And then we're putting stuff all over our bodies, which is, just so terrible. I forget how fast, I have to look this up, but there's a quote on like how fast it takes for a substance on your skin to enter your bloodstream. And it's like, half a second or something. So,
and we're eating bad food and chemicals in our food. So yeah, our organs didn't evolve to handle all of that. And there are periods where you need to help give it a boost and help to get those things out of your body, as quickly as possible.
Yes, definitely. And this all goes back to like everything you were recommending for detox, that all ties back to the weight loss.
Yes.
What you're doing for weight loss in order to prevent disease is, guess what? Also amazing for detoxing your body. So you want to just try to do everything at once so you get these long lasting results. And then you're also feeling like a brand new person and you have more energy. Your sleep is better. Your skin is better. So,
and you're stopping chronic disease, and you're eliminating or even reversing you know, things like, you know, cancer. One of the really interesting things that I didn't, you know, like when I'm developing a food prescription for someone, and I get a lot of cancer patients because I think they're kind of at the end of their rope as far as, you know, the medical system is. And one of the, you know, we pick foods that have proven what's called angiogenesis inhibition. And angiogenesis is the process where a tumor has to grow and develop its own blood supply in order to spread and grow and eventually kill you, kill the host. So if you block angiogenesis, then the tumor shrivels up and dies. And so chemotherapy drugs are angiogenesis inhibitors. But there are also some very powerful foods that are angiogenesis inhibitors as well. But and those are, you know, the basis for that type of food prescription. But what I also didn't know is that fat cells and fat tissue also grows through angiogenesis. So yeah, so when you eat foods that block angiogenesis for cancer, it's also blocking angiogenesis for fat growth and development. And so all of those things are very interrelated. When you, the beauty about eating in a certain way is that it's not just specific for one thing. When you're eating to stop your cancer, you're also eating for weight loss. You're also eating to stop the angiogenesis that occurs in the heart vessels to create a plaque. So it's not unlike traditional medicine where you take a pill for this thing and then you take another pill for that thing and another pill for that thing. When you make certain dietary changes, it actually helps all of it at once. And so you're increasing the health of your entire body, not just this organ or that organ, you know, or this condition.
Absolutely. And yeah, I first learned about angiogenesis in a book I read years ago called, I'm sure you've read it, it's called Anti-Cancer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved that book. But once again, I was like, why didn't I learn about this?
Exactly. Cool. I didn't. And I, you know, I'm not young, but, you know, I'm not ancient. I started my medical practice in 2000. So it wasn't, I was in medical school and in training, you know, not, you know, 50 years ago. So right. Even in 2000 or in the late 90s, none of this was being taught. I can tell you for a fact that none of this is being taught now in medical schools. So,
Yeah. It just goes back to, you know, you have to be your own advocate when you have a diagnosis, and you have to get, and I love that your program is called Second Opinion, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I love that. Yeah. So definitely if something doesn't feel right to you, or if you feel like there's something more you could be doing, then, you know, reach out to people and find people like Dr. Stacy, to basically enhance your treatment and do what's best for your body. So, okay. So the other thing I want to talk about is I love your Instagram feed and what you post on your website. You're always posting about functional foods, which is basically everything we're talking about here. Functional food is just something that has a proven function to, you know, benefit or enhance a certain system in the body, or like we were talking about, it, you know, it can decrease blood pressure or cholesterol. So something that has a specific effect in the body. So I wanted to just have you share a few of your favorite, like most powerful foods, or, you know, the common stuff, or obviously weight loss, but the blood pressure, cholesterol, lowering blood sugar and diabetes. So I just want to hear some of your go-tos.
So my go-tos, I get a lot of people with high blood pressure, probably because it's so common.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's extremely common and it's extremely deadly. But one of my favorites, I'm a juicer, by the way. I think it's not a fad. You know, I was, you know, decades and decades ago, back when, you know, Jack LaLanne, probably a lot of people listening to this don't even know who Jack LaLanne is. But, you know, kind of, you know, he was juicing back in the 60s before anybody even, you know, thought about it. But juicing is a great way to get high doses of very specific phytonutrients, and it's available in the body. You get it quickly. And so I'm a fan. So with blood pressure, one of my favorites is a juice that I make with the most powerful blood pressure lowering vegetables. So it's a mixture of beets, arugula, and celery juice. And all three of those foods, through repeated clinical trials and clinical studies, have been shown to really lower blood pressure. Even in people who are normotensive, meaning they're not having blood pressure issues, it lowers blood pressure. Beets alone, one cup of beet juice a day repeatedly has been shown to lower your systolic pressure, which is the top number, by 11 points. And that's because it's a high nitrate containing vegetable. It dilates your blood vessels, increases your blood flow, and lowers your blood pressure. Arugula is another high nitrate vegetable, which makes nitric oxide in your vessels. So it expands your blood vessels, relaxes your heart muscles, lowers your blood pressure. And celery contains a phytonutrient called thaliides. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's like P-H-T-H-A-L-I-D-E-S, something like that. Which that chemical as well lowers blood pressure and affects certain calcium receptors in your blood vessels. So that's one of my favorite for high blood pressure. Another heart disease favorite food, flaxseed, is amazing. Ground flaxseed, not the pill, but ground flaxseed has amazing effects in the heart and actually causing the regression of lesions in the heart and cholesterol plaques. And pomegranates are also a superstar when it comes to heart disease. For diabetes, cruciferous vegetables, again, those, you kind of know it's a cruciferous vegetable if it tastes a bit bitter, you know, like the Brussels sprouts and kale and those type of vegetables. They are absolute stars when it comes to heart disease and diabetes. They help regulate blood sugar. They're highly anti-inflammatory. And, you know, the key thing with people who have diabetes is you don't die of high blood sugar in diabetes. I mean, it's rare. What you die of is cardiovascular disease and strokes and heart attacks or peripheral vascular disease. So you need a diet that not only gets you to lose weight, but, you know, decreases or reverse the complications of your diabetes. And one of the big foods that, like, to me is a superfood, I know people use that term, you know, a lot, are mushrooms. Like mushrooms, if I could say like one food, you know, if you're trying to lose weight or if you're diabetic or if you have kids, like mushrooms, eat mushrooms all the time, every day. They are. Yeah.
Awesome. Do you have a favorite type like shiitake, oyster?
Just eat them. I mean, all of them have medicinal properties to them. You know, oysters, great, shiitake, portobello. I mean, it doesn't matter. Even dried mushrooms, I put in a broth, like instead of bone broth, which the science has shown doesn't do anything, and meat is inflammatory and it causes, you know, an abnormal gut flora. So bone broth is a fad. If anyone's listening, like, forget about it. But make your, quote, bone broth, instead of using meat, use mushrooms, you know, or even dried mushrooms. And they're highly antioxidant. They boost your immune system. They lower cholesterol. And they also are great with weight loss because they have phytonutrients that regulate glucose and insulin levels. So mushrooms are great. They're angiogenesis inhibitors. They're good all around. And they're one of the foods that I think everyone should be incorporating into their diet. You should eat them cooked. It's one of the things you don't want to eat raw, but I love mushrooms.
Yes, me too, actually. Shiitake's my favorite.
Yeah, shiitakes are great.
Okay, awesome. And just to clarify, now I know when you're mentioning the juice about beets, arugula, celery, just want to clarify, some people don't understand the difference between when we say juice, they think smoothie. So when we're talking about a juice, we mean you have a specific machine called a juicer, not a blender. So a juicer is where you're running the vegetable and fruit through. The fiber is discarded on the other side, and then the juice comes out the other side. So some people think, well, wait a second. I thought fiber was good. I thought we're supposed to get all the fiber. It is, definitely. But what you're getting in the juice is, like Dr. Stacey has mentioned a few times, you're getting concentrated phytonutrients, vitamins and minerals, because, I mean, it would be really hard to eat a whole bunch of kale, a bunch of celery, and two beets. I mean, you'd be full.
You'd be eating 24 ounces a day. And there's actually, you know, juicing does remove some fiber. It does remove soluble fiber. It does not remove insoluble fiber. So there, and the fiber that is left even after juicing is fiber that is critical in lowering cholesterol and in heart health. So it does remove some, but it doesn't remove all. But exactly like you said, we're not juicing for fiber. We're going to eat foods for fiber. That's why you should do both.
Exactly.
The juicing serves a different purpose than getting fiber.
Yeah. And that's why you should be juicing and also
eating
your diet. You know, you don't want to go to McDonald's and then have a green juice and think you're canceling it out.
Exactly. So that's very common.
And usually I recommend starting with smoothies for people that are kind of just easing into eating more plant-based foods.
I love smoothies also. If you don't, this is the thing, if you don't have to worry about doing everything exactly a certain way. If you don't have a juicer, then and you happen to have a blender, okay, then throw the beets and the celery and, you know, the arugula in a blender. Sure.
Totally. Yep. Do what you can. Do whatever you can to get them in.
Exactly.
But I think the point we're trying to get across is juices and smoothies are both amazing, and you can get both of them in your diet. Get them in when you can. It's just the point of getting it in, but I just don't want you guys to be confused and think, you know, juicing, you're removing too much fiber or anything, because that's just not what it's about. And, you know, smoothies have their place in the diet as well. So that was just my point on that. Okay. I love all the other foods. That's awesome. Flaxseed, especially ground flaxseed, like you said, needs to be ground, not whole, because you're just going to poop it out if it's whole, probably. And that's great for lowering cholesterol, I'm sure you.
Yes. Perfect for cholesterol and blood pressure.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And which is great because most of us have co-conditions. Like, we have multiple things going on at the same time.
No one has just one. I mean, I would say 90% of people who have high blood pressure have high cholesterol. You know, 90% of people who have diabetes have high blood pressure or high. And it's because the same things that cause one and contribute to the development of one contribute to the development of the other.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that is our main point here about weight loss and all these conditions, is that we want to attack it all and heal from them all in the same way, using the same lifestyle changes and diets for everything.
And
really,
skinny people, I've been in practice a long time. Skinny people have heart attacks all the time. Skinny people get cancer all the time. Skinny people get strokes all the time. So being skinny is not a protection against chronic illness. And as long as people have the mindset that all I need to do is lose weight, I'll be healthy, then it's, you know, get ready to go into the emergency room or be admitted into the hospital, because it absolutely is not true.
Right. And then it seems really unexpected. Yep. You know, people think, one of the most common things I heard from people in the hospital was, it's just happened out of the blue.
Yeah.
And I would think in my head, I'm like, no, this has been happening. This is building for 20 exactly. years. It's exactly. just, you know, your yeah. body couldn't take it anymore.
Or I hear, oh, but he's skinny. How does he have, you know, right. a body? Right. It's like, because it doesn't, your thinness is not a protection against disease.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's so true. And it's sad because we don't have, I mean, we're talking, you're a doctor, I'm a dietitian, and we're talking about how we don't get enough education on what certain foods can do for the body and the right type of program you want to be on. We had to kind of seek out that information. And then you just want to think about someone who is, you know, nutrition's not their field or medicine's not their field. And that information is really difficult to get because there's so much nutrition information out there. And
some of it's not good.
Yeah. And, oh, a lot of it's not good.
Yeah.
And then we just have the diet culture. And then we have the doctors just saying to lose weight, which it's totally not the doctor's fault. They don't have enough time to sit down and motivate you and give you a plan and all that. They just want you to get better by losing weight. But it is hard to... you know, if you're not in this field, it's very hard to figure out what the heck should I do. And that's usually what people are coming to me for and to you for, because they're just like, I don't know where to start. Like, I don't know what's the right thing to do for my body. So,
yeah. And the good thing about what, you know, you are a supporter of, and me as well, of, you know, plant-based diets. I call a plant-based diet a triple threat. So you lose weight, you stop chronic disease, and it's good for the planet, and you save the environment. So there's no other treatment plan that hits all three of those buttons, and that's why I like it. And the research supports it, and that's why I endorse it.
Right, absolutely. Plenty of research. And the thing I like about it as well is that people usually start feeling really good,
oh, absolutely.
Like very fast, yep. in multiple areas. So definitely. And, you know, we had talked about this before we were on the podcast, but just talking about, you know, if people hear plant-based diet and they're like, I can't do that. I can't go 100% plant-based. You don't have to. Like, a lot of my clients are not. It's just the point of increasing the amount of plants that you're eating and decreasing the amount of animal products. And it might seem difficult just thinking about that, but if you're being helped and coached in the right way with the right information and tools and tips and all that, the more you just learn to prepare the plant foods and, you know, how you kind of replace them on your plate with the animal, removing some of the animal foods, then it's a lot easier. So don't just think you have to do this overnight, because usually that's not the case. And then a lot of people just end up being about, you know, 80% plants, 20% animal, or whatever their ratio is. But
every little bit counts. And right. I don't want people to think that if they can't wake up tomorrow and be vegan, that they just can't embark on this journey at all. Every extra serving of unprocessed plant foods that you eat helps you. And the research supports that. You know, even one extra serving, and these are true numbers, one extra additional serving of cruciferous vegetables a day without changing anything else in your diet lowers prostate cancer by 15%. That's just one serving of vegetable. So anything that you can do, you know, adding, you know, a vegetable juice a day, or, you know, a cruciferous vegetable salad a day. I mean, anything you can do to increase your plant consumption and decrease meat. If you're a person who eats meat or animal products three times a day, try cutting it back to twice a day. And then maybe try it once a day. And then maybe, you know, pick a day or two of the week where you have no animal product. So it's a process, and it doesn't have to be all or nothing, but every little thing you do is going to help increase your overall health. And what I found with my clients is once you're able to get them off of that first medication, you don't have to argue with them anymore. Like, they're all on board. They're right. You know, texting you and calling you and emailing you about, okay, so how can I, you know, I cut back this much and this much and this much, and how can I get rid of this medicine and this medicine? You don't have to convince anymore. After that first medicine drops off and people are feeling better, then you know, it speaks for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why you kind of just got to make small changes and you know, do everything Dr. Stacey was just saying little by little, because then you can decide if it works for you. You're going to feel it immediately, and then you can let that motivate you. Definitely. Okay. Awesome. I think we covered so much today.
You have to have me back. I love you. Yes. You're like, yeah, I love what you're doing, and I'm a fan, and anything else I can do, you know, to help. And this was great, you know.
Yes. So how can people find you?
So you can find me. The website is foodtherapymd.com. I'm also on Instagram, foodtherapymd, and Facebook as well. And the links to all of the social media is also on the website. But on the website, there's some really amazing information and to get people started and what are certain foods that can be used for certain things. And if you want even more specialized or personalized, you know, food prescriptions, we offer that as well under the second opinion tab, but that's foodtherapymd.com.
Yes, definitely. I'll put all those links in the show notes. And I'll also, if you guys are following me on Instagram, definitely follow me on Instagram. I will, you know, when I put up the post for this episode, I'll tag Dr. Stacey in there, and you can follow her as well. She just posts awesome stuff. I love her content. So I know you guys will love it too. Okay, so awesome. If you like this episode, please subscribe so that you never miss an episode or updates as well for me, because as I'm starting to add more things in my business, I'm going to be, you know, updating you guys on the podcast, you know, probably before I release it elsewhere. Since you guys are such consistent listeners, I love that. And thank you guys so much for listening, because I started this podcast, you know, for fun, to collaborate with other people in the field and just get more information out there to you guys. And just seeing it grow and seeing all you guys listen to it is just really exciting. So thanks, Dr. Stacey, for coming on. And we're definitely going to have you back. But thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. It was my pleasure. And thank you.
Yes. All right. So, and here's just a little sneak peek for you guys of what's to come. I'm currently creating a group online course. It's very in the beginning stages, but I'm just so excited that I kind of want to just share a little bit about it with you guys. So it's going to be between 6 to 8 weeks. I haven't decided yet. And it's going to be hosted in a private Facebook group. So it will be kind of structured as each week there'll be a new video training, new modules, new, you know, PDFs that support it and all that stuff each week. Probably have live webinars as well for the group. So I don't have the launch date yet. But if you're interested, please direct message me on Instagram. Or you can let me know, you can email me at Samantha@SamanthaO'Toole.com. Let me know so that you can be one of the first to know when it does open for registration, because I will be, you know, advertising it elsewhere. But if you guys let me know that you are interested, it's going to be all about losing the first 10 pounds, just to kind of get you started. That doesn't mean you haven't tried, you know, other diets before or lost 10 pounds before. You know, maybe you're in a plateau or anything. This is going to just help you jumpstart your weight loss and, you know, get into all the long lasting things that we're talking about today, how to make it not a quick fix, but something that's really going to, you're going to lose it and you're going to keep it off and you're going to keep losing until you get towards your goal. So definitely let me know. Like I said, direct message me on Instagram or send me an email, Samantha@SamanthaO'Toole.com. And you'll be the first to know. I'll kind of have a wait list for you guys, because I will have a limited number of spots, just because, this is going to be the first round and I really want it to be kind of, small so I can get lots of feedback from you guys so I can, enhance it even more for the next round. So, okay. So thank you guys for listening, and reach out to Dr. Stacey and I on Instagram. Let us know how you like this episode, and I'll talk to you guys on the next episode. Bye.